You're listening to TIP.
Hey everyone, welcome to this Wednesday's release of the podcast where we're talking about Bitcoin. On today's show, I have a veteran investor and fellow Bitcoiner with Lawrence Lepard. Lawrence has been in the private equity space for multiple decades and goes by the byline, fix the money, fix the world. During our conversation, he provides an in-depth framework for why the current circumstances are a very different setup compared to anything we've seen during the past 10 years. We talk extensively about the inner plumbing and the flows of the various financial sectors. We talk about the impacts of global events that are making prices skyrocket. We talk about why Bitcoin will be so instrumental to a portfolio in this type of environment, among many other themes. So without further delay, here's my chat with the thoughtful Lawrence Lepard.
You're listening to Bitcoin Fundamentals by the Investors Podcast Network. Now for your host, Preston Pysh.
All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm really excited. This conversation is long overdue, Larry. I'm really excited to have this and have it recorded. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Nice to finally talk to you one-on-one.
Yeah. And I'm excited that hopefully we bump into each other in Miami here next week.
For sure. It's the plan.
So here's where I want to start off. And this was the question that I saw posted online for you specifically. And I just really like this to kind of kick off the discussion. The person asked, which market indicators are you most surprised about, concerned about, or paying attention to right now?
A great question. Very smart. So, well, a couple things. I mean, just the general stock market, and this ties into what probably is going to be one of your later questions, which is why hasn't gold taken off given all the gold-friendly stuff that's going on, or even Bitcoin? Why is Bitcoin kind of mired, you know, down below its all-time high given what happened in Russia? And I think, you know, I think what, Preston, what's really going on here, this reminds me a lot of 82 and 83, and I was an investor back then, which tells you my age, and it takes a while for the world to wake up. You know, you got big investment committees, you got decisions that take time. I mean, you and I can change on a dime. I mean, we see Putin do something, we're like, oh, I know what that means. Boom, do it. But, you know, big asset allocators, I mean, they get reports and they have a time frame and they have to have votes. And, you know, it just, things don't happen instantly in investment land. And to that point, you know, it's shocking to me. The probably the biggest indicator that I'm most shocked about is, given everything that's going on, it's shocking to me that the S&P is still within 5% of its all-time high, right?
Yes,
that it,
sir.
You know, we had this dip and it just came rallying back. And it just goes to show you how ingrained this buy the dip is. And it's because, you know, it's muscle memory. It's because it's worked since 2008. I mean, there are people who are stock market investors who've never seen anything close to a bear market, you know, and don't realize that between, you know, the peak in 2006 and the bottom in 2008, stocks lost 50% of their value. You know, same story in 2000, from 2000 to 2002, stocks lost 50% of their value. I don't think the world at large, many investors today don't understand that that's possible. And those were from lower levels on a, any way you want to measure it, right? In terms of, you know, the value compared to earnings, the value compared to the margins, the value compared to sales, you name it. We're more overvalued now. So I'm watching the stock market very carefully, because to me, that's an indicator of the sentiment living in, quote unquote, the old world. I think our world is in the process of changing from a deflationary world that we enjoyed from 1980 to 2019, 2000, and we're slowly rounding that bottom, and we're now entering an inflationary environment, a serious inflationary environment where molecules and stuff are going to be a lot more important than paper. And so I'm watching the stock market carefully. I'm also watching the bond market carefully. And so the 10-year, as we all know, has just taken off like, you know, like a rocket ship. And, you know, mortgage rates are going up a lot, right? We've seen them go from 3% to 5% on a 30-year. And, you know, obviously this is all because inflation's going up. And so, you know, these are all natural things you would expect given how much inflation's gone up. But people are thinking, well, this is temporary, or it's going to turn around, not transitory. I mean, even the Fed got rid of that word. But the one that amazed me is a guy on Twitter, a great guy, does a great piece of work named Macro Elf. And he laid out the bond swaps 5 years out. People think that from 2027 to 2032, the 5-year inflation swap is at 2.5%. So that means the general people, sophisticated people who are investing in the marketplace today, think we're going to eventually get all this stuff under control and go back to a low inflation, deflationary environment. And I think that is just absolutely and completely wrong. You know, and so it's classic investing in the rearview mirror. Let me draw in this 1982 example because I think it's useful. So, you know, I'm out of college and I work in Wall Street a couple of years and I go to business school. I'm investing money professionally. That's my job. And I remember the time playing very, very well. And everyone was saying, you know, and we had just come out of a decade, the 70s, where bonds just got annihilated. Stocks got annihilated multiple times. Kind of they were seesawing up and down. And everyone thought inflation was extremely high. Gold had gone from 35 to 800. And the consensus view in 81, 82, and 83 was inflation is going to be with us for the rest of our lives. Mm. It's a serious problem that will never go away. Mm-hmm. Inflation will never go away. And therefore, bonds are the worst investment in the world, and stocks are the second worst investment in the world. Now, it had all just changed. And, you know, the one smart guy out there who I listened to was a guy named Gary Schilling, who was an economist way back then. And he wrote a book and he foresaw what was coming and he bought the 10-year strips. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's where they strip the principal off of a 10-year and actually bought the 20 and the 30-year strips as well. And he put his entire net worth into that, like in 1981. And this was when the 10, you know, the 30-year was trading at 10 or 14% or something, right? And he made multiples of his money mm-hmm. in the next 5 years, enough that he could retire. And so the point is that he caught a trend change from an inflationary environment to a deflationary environment. And stocks took off. And of course, it took a while to get going. I mean, I remember 82 and 83 was pretty choppy, you know, for stocks. And, you know, bonds did well in that time frame because inflation slowly started to come back down. But remember, you had an entire world thinking one way, mm-hmm. and it took them time to shift their thought pattern. You still have an entire world thinking that Lacey Hunt is right, and he's dead ass wrong. He's completely and utterly wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's talking his book because he's made all his money off the deflation trade. And so, you know, what's happened here is we underinvested in real productive capacity, and it's now showing up everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't mm-hmm. have enough things and we got plenty of paper.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're beginning to see this playing itself out. I mean, things have been doing better. Paper has been doing worse, but there's still a lot of doubt and, you know, it's going to take time. My opinion is when, you know, we're very, very close to what I call the launch pad for silver and gold, which is, and then we'll get to Bitcoin in a minute, but, you know, which is when gold gets through 2000 with authority and silver gets through 30 with authority, it's going to be game on. People are going to start to realize, okay, you know, this is real. We've got inflation, a new all-time high in gold. That'll be meaningful. But right now, you know, they've been able to hold it down. That's the other thing. The government obviously has their own set of interests. You know, they know that these are the warning signals and alarms. They know that oil is a problem. And I'm sure they're out there creating paper oil and paper silver and paper gold. But at the end of the day, you know, and probably paper natural gas if they can. But at the end of the day, paper natural gas isn't going to warm Germany, right? Mm-hmm. And so...
Boy, oh boy, what a problem they got there.
Right? And they got a serious problem. Yeah. And it's not going to, you know, and you know, fertilizer that's gone up 5X, you know, is going to significantly increase food costs. And so, you know, I think, whereas I think a lot of people are thinking, well, this inflation is bad, but it's because of COVID or it's because of the poor, it's because of supply chain. You know, it's all because of things, and things will go back to getting better. And all I would ask people to consider is maybe they won't get better. What if they actually get worse? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a possibility. I think it's a real possibility that the market is just starting to come to grips with. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but that's kind of how I'm looking at the world right now.
And I agree with everything that you're saying. The one thing that I want to go back to, because there's a lot there that we're going to obviously talk through the rest of the episode, but the 5% off the highs on the S&P after what we've been seeing in the marketplace with the Russian invasion, the inflation prints that look like they're going double digits, I would suspect here in the coming quarter or two, and equities priced at, what would you say the equity market is priced at? 2-3% as far as the yield right now?
Like, right, exactly. Like,
it's totally crazy. And you had alluded to this idea that everyone has been duped into this buy the dip mentality because it's just, it has worked. Larry, what do you think that the average participant, they've probably never even lived through a bear market. When you think about the age of a lot of these analysts on Wall Street and when they kind of came in, anybody under the age of, what would it be, 30, 35 years old has never even experienced a bear market.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, the last 12 years, you know, or more have been nothing but bull. And, you know, and the other thing that I think people aren't factoring in is look at what the Fed is saying. Now we all know they're going to have to flip flop and they're going to pivot. We'll get to that in future part of this conversation. But, you know, any one of the things they're talking about doing would create a problem. Okay. I mean, well, first of all, the 2-10-year spread turning over, that says we're going to have a recession.
Yeah.
But secondly, more importantly, I mean, they're talking about 9 rate hikes. I mean, good God, man, look at what they did from 2015 to 2017. They had to very, very slowly creep it from 0 to 2, and that almost blew up the markets.
And, you know what I mean? And that was then they're, when you then they're didn't talking have, about, and you didn't have any inflation to like,
exactly,
you know, there was nothing.
Well, and they're talking about tapering QT, you know, they never really tapered before. All they did was let it run off.
Yeah.
And as you'll recall, when Powell said, yeah, it's going to be boring. And, you know, it's all this tapering, it's all on autopilot. You know, the market quickly dove 20% and he had to do the first pivot. So, you know, we know a pivot's coming in the future and that's what will lead us to hyperinflation, in my opinion. But the point is, and we also know corporate margins are falling, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to lose, you know, if demand is soft, they're going to lose pricing power, but labor costs are going up. We know that. We saw what happened at Deere. You know, they got 5% gains for 5 years on wages, which is obviously below inflation. But, you know, and we're at peak margins right now. I mean, average corporate margins, average profitability right now is 11%. It's the highest it's ever been. So, I mean, here's a perfect storm. You got the Fed tightening. You got the Fed withdrawing liquidity. You got all your corporate costs going up. You got soft demand up above and you got peak multiples. Yeah. I mean, Hussman's right. The market could go down 75% and still not be fairly valued.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. I mean, this whole 60-40 thing is just going to blow up in everybody's faces. It's going to be tragic. I mean,
it is
first of all, the 40 is going to be worthless,
yeah.
You know, and the 60 is going to get marked down by 50% at least, in my opinion. So my hair's on fire. I'm telling you, I'm sitting here.
Well, and you say it'll get marked down 50% at least. You know, maybe I'm even more bearish than you in that in order for them to continue this manipulation in place, I just don't know how they're going to be able to sustain any semblance of normal price signals. And if we look at the bond market currently priced at what, 2.5%-ish to 3%, if inflation starts blowing out double digits, we're more than 50% then maybe.
Oh, easily. And so then what do they do? I mean, you know, the thing that gets really super interesting is trying to game theory out, you know, moves and counter moves. I mean, it's been amazing to me the way the Fed has been bluffing, you know, this tough guy Fed, you know, I mean, I've got Bullard, who used to be the biggest dove, trying to be the biggest hawk, you know. And saying, well, we'll go to 50 basis points. We're going to have nine increases. You know, we could do a withdrawal next month. I mean, it's interesting, though. They talk about all that stuff. And you notice when it comes down to it, I mean, like if in my view, if Powell had any balls at all, he would have said, oh, it's 50 basis points. It's 100 basis points. You know, if he'd been serious about it. But here's the thing that they don't say that we all know. They really need this inflation. The reason they need it is that they can't deal with this debt structure unless, you know, they get inflationary growth. To make the inflation, you know, to make the numbers such that the debt is a smaller percentage of GDP. That's key to their whole thing. So, you know, my sense is their playbook is they're going to talk about how tough they're going to be and how they're going to get inflation under control, but they're really not going to do very much.
Yeah. Just let the market sell off.
They're going to let it go.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about just the Russia piece here. So,
yeah.
So this is coming out next week. So we're going to know the outcome of how tomorrow kind of happens. But Putin has made the comment that they're going to pay with ruble. And if they don't like it, then he's going to shut off the power. Is this a real threat? Is he going to actually have to flip his cards at the end of this hand and demonstrate that he actually is going to shut off the power to the EU?
I suspect he is. And I suspect he will. I mean, I don't think he's bluffing.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree with you.
Look, I mean, it's hard. You know, it's this is a very tricky situation to be in because, you know, I don't like the political leaders on, you know, all around the world, and Putin's one of them. And I in no way support this guy. Okay, I mean, he's a, you know, he's an evil guy. Having said that, I understand what he's doing and I understand why he's doing it. And so I look at it from an analytical point of view, not a judgmental point of view. And I think that he is in a situation where he knows he's got the bullwhip and he, you know, he's got what the world needs. He's got commodities. And he's, you know, he was very strategic in the way he let us get way out over our skis with all this leverage. And now he's saying, fine, you know, you want my stuff that you need? That's great. You can pay me in something that's real. Because, you know, in my opinion, what he's doing now is like what De Gaulle did in 71. And that's why this is, to me, this is an enormous monetary earthquake. I mean, I thought gold and silver were going to work and Bitcoin were going to work beautifully long before Putin did any of this stuff.
Yeah.
To me, what just happened, I was like, I fell out of my chair. You know, I was just like, this is a major, major accelerant to the trends that already exist. And then when the U.S. reacted, well, when Trudeau reacted to the truckers and then the U.S. reacted to Russia by freezing stuff, I mean, that's like an advertisement for Bitcoin and gold, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
The authorities can grab your money, you know.
Well, the FX, I think the FX reserve piece was, you know, I was talking, I think, to Luke Groman the day that that happened. And I know when we stopped recording, we were just like, I can't believe this just happened. Like, this is.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I had the same reaction. I mean, it's like, you know, it's I mean, what happened to the rule of law? You know what I mean? I mean, it's. You know, and so, and of course, we're demonizing this guy, but, you know, it's like, okay, but what we just did, is that correct as well? Whatever. Let's not get into the what's right and what's wrong. Let's just look at what's happening. The fact of the matter is, he is saying, I'm not going to take this paper in exchange for my real stuff. And we are trying to demonize him. And, you know, I think the U.S. strategy has been, well, let's see if we can piss off all his oligarchs and maybe they'll knock him off. But my sense is that he's pretty well defended and that's not going to happen. And he's going to be able to carry through on this thing. And, you know, I'm guessing the way I read it, if he doesn't get payment from Germany in the form of rubles, he's not going to ship the gas. They're going to turn the pipeline off.
So what happens then? Because I'm with you. I think that that's the highest probable outcome here is that
right. They
don't pay. He shuts off the gas. And then what?
Well, they go into some form of rationing, you know, gas prices go up even higher, you know, fertilizer prices go up even higher. You know, I think that, I mean, he can sit there. He doesn't need to sell that gas, you know, whereas the Western world is highly leveraged with a lot of paper, a lot of derivatives, a lot of stuff, you know, that it's all linked together. And when you pull out the actual physical piece, the physical collateral, you know, the paper stuff doesn't work anymore. And so, you know, we've already seen, I mean, you know, you've seen Trafigura and some of these big commodity houses have had serious problems. And we saw what happened with nickel, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the nickel blowout, that basically just revealed the LME to be a complete farce.
Yes.
Right? And something very similar, by the way, could happen with silver and gold. I think it might. I mean, I can't predict it and I can't guarantee it.
Yeah.
But the point is that we've got this enormous paper structure built on these underlying things. And if you stop the flow of the underlying things like he's doing, everybody looks around at the paper and says, huh, what's this paper worth if it's not connected to something?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my counterparty is going to fail. And so this is, you know, you had the same thing in 2008, but the paper was all built on the houses and it was the banks and it was at a lower level. And the Fed could step in and say, okay, no problem. We're going to make all these guys money good, you know, with fake money.
And well, so you didn't have this strategic situation kind
right.
of
right. I mean, yeah,
out.
Russia wasn't involved. Right. Yeah. right. So, yeah. So here, I mean, you know, look, it's a big mess and it is going to, in my view, get worse because I don't think this guy is going to back down. I think he understands the vulnerabilities. I mean, there's a lot of data that says he understands how fractional reserve the gold market is. And it's interesting, the choice, the ruble price he chose for gold was perfectly calculated to match today's price. And so he's basically backing the ruble with gold. I mean, he's not exchanging. You can't take the ruble and get gold out of his vault. So it's not full exchangeable standard. But in a piece, by being able to, by setting the prices the way he has, he's taking, you know, people to a gold standard because he's forcing other people who want his resources to pay in something that's real. And that's huge. And it's going to be, you know, the West is going to find that there's not as much stuff out there as we thought. And we've underinvested. We've invested in the wrong things and we've underinvested in the right things. And so the price of everything is about to get a lot higher. And, you know, I mean, I'm shocked. I'm sure you've seen this. I think on Twitter yesterday, I saw some $7, $8 for gasoline in California.
Yeah.
I mean, how long? I mean, and so you look at the stock market's within 5% of its record high. And you've got $7 gasoline.
Doesn't
I mean,
I'm like, sense.
You know, like my head is spinning. I mean, how is that possible?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just, it makes no sense. And the reason is the stock market guys are doing a Tina. They're going, well, there is no alternative and there's lots of liquidity and, you know, we can lever it up and it's worked so far, but you know it, I know it. This is going to end badly for bond bulls and stock bulls. And it's going to end better for commodity people.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Our friends at Corient provide wealth management services centered around you. Corient's goal is to exceed your expectations and simplify your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. They are one of the largest integrated fee-only U.S. registered investment advisors, and Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. They have extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. The teams at Corient put the collective power of their expertise into building you the custom wealth, investment, and family office solutions that can help you reach your holistic financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, speak with an advisor today at Corient.com. That's spelled Corient.com. That's Corient.com. When Rainn Wilson had a great idea, he turned to AT&T Business. They assured him no matter how out there his idea may be, they had his back. So he came up with this, a talking pillow designed to put you to sleep, backed by a reliable network and the only network with built-in security controls. And thus, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your business to the next level at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. Do you guys ever feel overwhelmed with all that's going on in the markets and you feel like you just can't keep up with the day-to-day news headlines? Today's show sponsor, Yahoo Finance, is my go-to solution to keeping up with today's top news and stay informed with what's happening globally. With Yahoo Finance, I'm able to see the biggest trends and biggest movers in the stock market, what's happening with interest rates, major geopolitical events, and much more. If it wasn't for Yahoo Finance, I would have no idea that Tesla is laying off 10% of their staff or why iPhone shipments are down 9% year over year. Yahoo Finance also has a number of other cool features, including a tool that lets you link in all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts. Yahoo Finance is one of my favorite tools that I use in my investing toolkit, and it's what I read each morning to kick off my day to stay in the loop with what's happening in the markets. Join more than 90 million monthly users today and get comprehensive financial news and analysis at yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, back to the show.
I think your comment about the nickel when they stopped the exchange and then they rolled back trades that happened that entire day is truly a precursor for what's to come, I think, for maybe the rest of this year or even the year after.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Twitter had it right. I mean, the house doesn't like to lose, right? I mean, they did this to the Hunts. I mean, and this is something for all Bitcoiners, gold people, silver people, we've all got to be aware of this. They are going to change the rules.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw this firsthand. I was massively short the financials in September of 2008. They outlawed selling the financials in September. I lost 5,000 basis points. You know, in 3 weeks. And my fund went from having an up, I had the Michael Burry trade on, but I didn't know what CDS was. And my fund was up 50% and I ended the year down 6.
Wow. You know,
because
they changed the rules.
Because they changed the rules, right? I mean, the Hunt brothers had them beat. They had them cornered. There wasn't enough silver. And they changed the rules. I mean, whoever was long those nickel contracts, they had it. You know, I mean, they did it with GameStop. They did it, you know, they do this over and over again. So the difference with Russia is They can't change the rules if you need the physical stuff.
Yes.
I mean, right? I mean, you either have the oil and gas, you know, or you don't. And, you know, the paper is irrelevant, right?
Well, so people from the Bitcoin space that are listening to this, they hear you say that they're just going to change the rules on you. How do you think that they could do that with respect to Bitcoin?
Well, you know, fortunately, it's quite a ways down the road, and they're going to have a hard time. You know, we've got some senators in favor, et cetera. They're going to have a hard time coming after it that way. But having said that, as things get more and more desperate, you don't know where they'll go. I think they're going to do one. Well, there are a couple of things I predict. First of all, you know how when you if you have foreign money overseas, if you're an American and you have an overseas bank account with more than $10,000. You have to report it, right? A lot of people don't know that, but you do. You send a form to Detroit every year. I do it because I have some accounts in Switzerland with gold in them. They did that to try and crack down on tax evaders, right? My suspicion is that something very similar will be coming for Bitcoin. They'll say, okay, you've got to report your Bitcoin addresses and you got to tell us how many coins you have because this is a tax evasion scheme. We don't like it. You got to do it. And at that point, every Bitcoiner in this country is going to face some difficult decisions, right? You know, do you want to just have the 12 words? What do you want to report? What don't you want to report? Whatever. We're not going to go there. But the point is, you know, that's an issue. So I could see them coming for that. I could also see them coming for, you know, windfall capital gains taxes on gold, silver, and Bitcoin holders. But again, the advantage of these assets is that they are bearer assets.
Yes.
And maybe this, maybe you can hang on long enough to the point where this regime fails. I mean, in France, in the French Revolution of 1789, the assignat failed. Okay, and you know, basically, the government at the time was very anti-gold, and they knew everyone hoarded gold because they knew the paper was failing, and so they said, "You got to report your gold. You got to turn in your gold." Of course, nobody did, or a lot of people didn't, and they found people who had hidden gold or had not reported their gold, and they guillotined them. Okay, so I mean, you know, governments can be brutal with respect to people that they think are, you know, behaving outside their interests. And you could certainly see a scenario where they say, you know, we had this great, you know, fiat money scheme going. Well, they wouldn't say that, but they, you know, we had this great economy going, we had this great system going, and you sound money people, you totally trashed it for us. You know, you're anti-American, you've ruined our system. You know, we need to tax you. We need to know what you hold, you know.
And you're already seeing some Wall Streeters saying these things about our community. I mean, Mike Green's a perfect example where he was saying, y'all are un-American. And at that point, I was like, I disagree with you and I don't really want to hear your opinion anymore.
I have no time for that guy.
I don't buy into this idea of either you believe in free and open markets, right? And that the best, you know, if I want to go out there and I want to buy something that you think is worthless, if you actually believe in free and open markets, you should promote the person to do that because then they're going to have less buying power and less influence into the direction of where everything goes, right? To imply something like that, to me, is such a fundamental flaw of what this country stands for, which is free and open markets and just capitalism, right? And freedom.
Completely agree. I mean, at some fundamental level, you have to decide, you know, who is more sovereign, the individual or the state? And, you know, statists believe that they have a right to tell you how to live your life.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that. And I don't believe that's what the Constitution says. I don't believe that's what the majority of Americans believe. And so I am very anti-statist. But there are people who are statists who, you know, they use all kinds of different mechanisms to try and, you know, control people. I mean, you know, and this has been going on for years. I mean, all these wars are driven by statists and all these wars are financed by fiat money. You know, if we had sound money, we wouldn't have these wars. You know that. I know that. Bitcoiners know that. Gold people know that. You know, and the statists know it too. And that's why we're their enemy. Because it, you know, their system rewards them and punishes us. And it really, what it really does is it punishes the average working people who are unable to save their labor and therefore basically get in a situation where they can't even retire because they never know if their money is going to last.
One of the glimmering hopes that I see in government is at the state level relative to the federal level. So let's just pull the thread and let's say at the federal level that it becomes politically popular to do some of these things that you're talking about that have been demonstrated throughout history. It appears like states like Wyoming, Texas, and a few others have already started passing some type of protective measures for self-custody. And I right. guess I'm hopeful that that competitive dynamic that exists here in the United States between the state the rights of state powers versus at the federal level will really kind of kick into gear and protect the interests of people that are local into some of these jurisdictions that have demonstrated a strong resolve for protecting self-custody. What are your thoughts on some of that?
Well, I think that's right. And I, you know, there could be a secession of several states. I mean, obviously Florida and Texas are the two most likely candidates. And yeah, I mean, it's I'm in favor of that. I mean, the federal government, I mean, what do, really? I mean, they conduct wars and they redistribute income. I mean, those are the two biggest line items in their budget. And, you know, if Texas or Florida were to say, you know, sorry, we'll opt out, you know, we'll send you our share of the military budget for national defense and we'll opt out all that other stuff, you know, it would be quite a challenge. You know, I don't think we're going to fight another civil war, but it's interesting that there are big pieces of this country and hopeful that there are big pieces of this country that understand just how broken the political system and how broken the federal system is. My personal view is that the way this is going to go down is before that happens with the states falling off. One of the questions you put up a thread, so what are questions you want to ask Larry? I think we're going to have hyperinflation, Preston. I really do. I don't like saying that. You know, I know others believe it but don't say it. Well, I'll say it. I think it's going to happen. Yeah. And I think when the currency fails, just because mathematically it's kind of baked in, and historically it's the pattern that happens when we see what's going on now happens. I don't know the time frame. It could be 2 years. It could be 8 years. But it's somewhere in that window. And when the currency outright fails, when it will not spend, when everyone has given up on it, well, that'll lead to all the politicians being thrown out, everyone being very angry, you know, a lot of suffering and pain all around for all of us. It'd be horrible. And yet, you know, I believe that there's a remnant of smart people in this country and others that will say, you know, the reason this occurred to us is that the government was broken and we got to reform it. We got to fix it. So we'll get, you know, Mayor Suarez will become President Suarez. And, you know, we'll go to a Bitcoin standard or a gold standard and we'll have term limits and we'll, you know, try all the criminals who put us into this mess. And, you know, there'll be a better system coming out the other side. That's, you know, to me, that's the task of Marty Bent's generation in this fourth turning. Yeah. I mean, you know, Marty and Jack Mahler's are going to be the leaders of the hero generation. They're going to lead us to the other side when this collapse occurs. And to me, it's pretty inevitable that it's going to occur. I mean, I think fiat's going to be worthless and not that far away.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that what we see playing out, and people ask me this, they're like, well, how do you have so much conviction in that idea? And I'm saying it's not necessarily that Bitcoin is going to like pull it there. I think it's more that the existing system and the macro backdrop, especially in fixed income, is so incredibly broke that it's going to push and force this. It's going to thrust Absolutely. It upon us. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's just, yeah. I mean, it's math. It's just math, guys. It's yeah. just so simple. You can't increase the debt load faster percentage-wise than you increase the productivity without having, you know, it has to implode. It yeah. just, by definition, it has to, because we have to continually print more and more money. And so to me, the next big thing that's going to happen is we're going to have the next Powell pivot. And I don't know when that happens. I can't predict. Nobody does. But given what they're doing and given how fast things are moving, my suspicion is it's probably not going to be that far out. Because when and you know, the Fed now has three mandates, right? They always had the mandate of, you know, of full employment and controlling inflation. But the third mandate really is continuous markets. And so, you know, as we were talking about earlier in this conversation, what happens when the bond market starts to break? And everybody, you know, I mean, look, I mean, the 10-year in and of itself is absolutely ridiculous.
We're getting there.
You got, yeah, it's already broken. But I mean, yeah. I'm talking about really breaking. I mean, yeah. you got 8% inflation and you're getting a 2-point-something% yield, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So pretty soon the entire bond market is going to say sold to you, Fed. And, you know, if rates, and so as people sell out of the 10-year, which they've been doing substantially, and it goes much, much higher, it just starts shutting off everything. And, you know, then the government says, well, okay, you know, and they can't sell their bonds. And so they have to continue to buy them themselves. And, you know, what's standing between us and hyperinflation right now is just lack of awareness by enough people and in Gresham's Law. I mean, that, and I've said this many times, read Reinhardt and Rogoff, read all the hyperinflation books. What you come to understand is that hyperinflation is not, it's money velocity based on people dumping the money. And people dump the money when they come to the conclusion, this is Gresham's Law, they come to the conclusion, there's absolutely no way the government can stop printing. And some of us already know that. I believe that. You believe that. Yeah, others, Bitcoiners generally believe that. Most of America doesn't still believe it. They're probably worried about it. They're starting to be worried about it, but they don't believe it. But once they come to believe it, they're going to want out of every single dollar they've got. Yeah, they're going to sell every single bond they've got. They're going to sell a lot of the stocks they've got. And they're going to move into real things. And they're going to see the price of real things going up really fast. And that's how hyperinflation happens. It's an abandonment of the currency because the stewards of the currency have so abused it, and there's no way they can bring back the confidence. I mean, you know, Volcker did it. I mean, we had a mini version of this, obviously, in the 70s. Gold went from 35 to 800, and it did it when inflation was high in the teens and so forth. But, you know, we weren't as indebted, and Volcker was able to step in with a 20% interest rate and bring back confidence. I mean, if we had a 20% interest rate today, the entire country would go bankrupt. Oh, I mean, there's just there's no way, right?
Immediately.
It looked like it looked like the Great Depression. And actually, one of the great questions on your thread was, you know, for me was, well, are we going to have hyperinflation or deflation? And the answer is both. I mean, it's, you know, but it's just not clear in what order, because, you know, the inflation is going to be so messy that activity is going to collapse, and that's going to lead to deflation. I mean, I think sadly what's going to probably happen is we're going to have, you know, deflation in assets, everything you own, and we're going to have inflation in everything you need to stay alive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, which is why, you know, another question was, well, is housing a good store of value? Yes, it is if you don't lose it, because it's got practical utility. The thing that's wrong with it is the government can tax it, you know, but at least it's a place you can live. And, you know, if you know your income is solid and, you know, you're not too levered on it, I mean, in some places it makes sense. You get a 30-year, I mean, there was a time when you get a 30-year mortgage for 3%. I mean, you're putting on a Hugo Stinnes trade by levering yourself up to buy something you needed, right? Which is why, you know, I think that housing was up 20% last year. I mean, isn't it amazing? Housing prices are up more in this cycle than they were in the 2008 housing bubble.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, to me, that's just people realizing that this is an asset that's real. And so there, it's Gresham's Law for housing.
Larry, I got a question for you. You had mentioned that getting the timing of the Powell pivot is something that you can't forecast. When I'm looking at the bond yield curve and I'm looking at the last 40 years of this downtrend on the yields that we've seen, they seem to hit like this mechanical stop that is very predictable when you look at all the different durations, and they all kind of hit a different yield depending on which duration you're looking at. And when I'm looking at this, just as an example, like the 30-year right now is suggesting that once we get to around 2.87, we start to hit that 40-year trend line on the 30-year, and today it's at 2.5%. So we're like dangerously close to this limit that we've seen for 40 years, at least on the 30-year. You go to the 10-year, I think we're already there. And so you had mentioned that you think we're getting dangerously close to whatever that limit is for the Powell pivot. Do you think that this is a good way to kind of, if a person was trying to estimate on when that's going to happen, or like how much is left before things dangerously start to fall apart in the fixed income market, is this a tool that you think you could rely on? Is there anything else?
No, it's a great tool. Well, yeah, I mean, I think, yes, that's probably your primary tool. The things I'm watching the stock market, because as the stock market starts to sell off, you know, there's negative wealth effect and so on and so forth. I'm watching the price of Bitcoin, and I'm watching the price of gold and silver. I mean, to me, those really are your dashboard for what's going on here. And everybody else is watching them too, and this is the common knowledge game that we're playing, right? So, you know, if the bond market really starts to fall apart, I mean, recall that we had a preview of it, frankly. It's a good preview. So in March of 2020, COVID hit, right? And stock market, you know, big exogenous shock. Stock market, boom, you know, just took in a huge dive. But the thing that the really interesting clue there is what normally happens, stock market takes a dive, bond market should have been well bid, right? People should have said, okay, great, stocks are cratering. Oh, yeah, I'm running into bonds. You know, bonds should have rallied like crazy. Well, they did initially. And then they started to sell off, right? And it was kind of like, and eventually, as Grohman points out, eventually there was no bid in the bond market. Well, that scared the Fed. You can see it. It's in their minutes. And so, you know, that's when Powell came in and did his Draghi and said, okay, whatever it takes. And that's how we printed $4 trillion worth of money, you know, in a couple of years, which was basically all the QEs from 2008 to 2013. You know, we did it all in 2 years. So it's the Hemingway, you know, bankrupt, how'd you do it? You know, well, two ways, you know, gradually, then suddenly. Watch the acceleration. Watch the second derivative, right? I mean, if we see serious acceleration in the sell-off in the bond market and rates going up, we see serious acceleration in stocks. We see serious acceleration in gold, silver, or Bitcoin. You'll know it's happening. That's, to me, those are the clues. And we've seen all of those. I mean, we saw, you know, just recently we got a pretty serious, the Russia thing hit, we got a pretty serious acceleration in gold. But then they kind of got it under control. Yeah, nickel blew up, but they put that back in the can. And, you know, they got everything under control. And, you know, gold's come back off of the down below 2000, came back and tested, you know, low 1900s. I mean, you know, so you get these, it's like waves. You get a wave and then it'll stop. And you'll get a retrace, but not all the way back. I mean, gold's not back in the 1800s, the 1700s, right? I mean, Bitcoin, same thing. I mean, Bitcoin was in the high 69 area. You know, and okay, it slowed down. It run awfully hard, right? I mean, everyone who was in it at 5 or 10,000 was feeling pretty good at 69. I recall it. They were all telling me I was an absolute idiot for owning gold. and you know, I mean, look, I get it. You know, and then it backed off to 30. You know, and I was kind of there's a lot more silence. Kind of like, oh, okay, yeah. So these are to me, these are the indicators, right? Because they are the most liquid, most watched signposts. And you can bet that when Bitcoin did that, alarm bells were going off in Washington, D.C. and at the Fed. I mean, they had, right? I mean, an exchange stabilization fund. Just as when gold takes out 2,000 the next time, which I think it will within a month or two here, you know, it's gonna squirt on up to 2,500 or 3,000. It's going to be game on, and these stocks are going to go berserk. And, you know, everybody's going to go, huh, what's going on here? And it's going to be because of the obvious inflation and more people coming to realize. I mean, I think I've said this many, many times, but it's just substitution. I mean, you've got $350 trillion of financial assets. You've got $7 trillion of sound money assets. All that $350 trillion has to do is some piece of that has to say, hey, I'm not holding my purchasing power. Give me some of that sound money stuff. And so even if it's only 10%, that's $35 trillion fiat assets chasing $7 trillion of gold, silver, Bitcoin, and gold stocks. I mean, it's, you know, what's going to happen? The seven's going to get bigger. You know, that's just going to happen. I mean, that's a fact. And so, you know, people have asked for my targets on this stuff. I mean, I think this year we'll see gold at 3,000. I think this year we'll probably see Bitcoin at 150. I think this year we'll probably see silver at 50, you know, in the next wave up. And if the pivot comes, and that's even before the pivot.
So I mean, Larry, I think, when you say pivot, are you saying yield curve control is basically what's going to have to happen for them to get things under control? Or what do you think that pivot looks
like? I'm saying, yes, yield curve control would be one form of the pivot because they have to spend, you know, they have to grow their balance sheet to do that. They've claimed they're going to shrink their balance sheet. Yeah, yield curve control. Any reversal of this tough guy Fed talk that we've heard. But here's my sense, Preston, this is important. A lot of people are like, well, they're going to roll over right away. I don't think so. I think they're aware of how much fire they're dealing with here. And I actually think they're gonna let the, I mean, Joe Wang on Twitter does a good job of this. I think they're gonna let the stock market go down 20 or 30%. I mean, I think the reason they're gonna do it is they kind of need to do it to create demand destruction to have a chance of getting oil and all this energy inflation back in the can. So
you know sell-offs that we've seen that have been pretty sizable in the last decade have been around that point that you just said, that percentage drop. I know the March, right, we were down 30% in March on the NASDAQ at least.
Right.
So when I chart that out from the high that we've seen in the NASDAQ, it's pretty much right where you're saying, another 25% from here before they're going to step in and do anything.
Right.
And it seems like that's their trigger, that things, if they let it go any more than that, it's going to really get disgusting and maybe difficult to even calm the markets.
I think that's exactly right. I think they know that's the point at which people really start to freak out and they got no chance of bringing it back. And so, you know, as much as, I mean, and they'll, you know, they'll probably have some excuse for it. It'll be, I mean, it's interesting to me the way
Russia,
right? They blame. Russia, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not our fault. We had to do this. This is the only natural thing to do, you know, and they'll do, I mean, they've already started doing this, right? I mean, the gasoline prices are high in California. Pelosi says we should start sending checks to people as rebates. Other countries have talked about that too.
Yeah.
You know, so, where's that money going to come from? Well, we're going to print it. So, you know, look, there will be, and people will be screaming, you know, bloody murder in terms of gas prices and food prices. You know, there's an election coming up. So, I mean, one thing I'm sure of, my guess is before the election comes up, you know, Biden's going to forgive all the student debt, right? He'll just waive that. You know,
that's an interesting call. And I think you might be on to something there, because they're going to have to do something pretty miraculous in order to turn the tide here, based on the numbers that I'm seeing.
Well, you know, he's got 40% approval rating. It's going to get lower. I mean, look, you know, you would not want to be a politician in this country, anywhere really in the world, in the next year. I mean, there are going to be a lot of really righteously pissed off people. I get it. Mm-hmm. And they're going to take it out, I hope, on all the incumbents, because frankly, they all stink, you know, and then hopefully, you know, over time, probably not this cycle, but a few cycles out, we actually start getting some sound money incumbent, you know, or sound money candidates. You know, who are like, look, you know, you hate the inflation we're living with. We do too. Here's how you solve it. You do a monetary restructuring, you know, and that would be a lot easier, not easier, but it would be a fairer way of solving this problem rather than letting it go to its end conclusion of runaway inflation.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Long Angle is a private network dedicated to identifying and accessing the best private market investment opportunities. Long Angle is a vetted community of 3,000 very high net worth investors who manage more than $40 billion in assets. Members leverage their collective experience and scale to access and underwrite some of the world's best alternative investments. Diligence teams made up of members who have spent a career in each asset class underwrite every opportunity. Deals range from private equity, search funds, and private credit to secondaries, venture, and energy. Long Angle does not charge membership fees, but does require an interview and validation of investable assets. Long Angle is a community of investors, not a wealth manager. Members are treated as partners on every deal, with full transparency to diligence and underwriting. All members receive equal access to negotiated fee discounts. For more information and to apply for membership, visit longangle.com. That's longangle.com. Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, back to the show.
So here's my issue. I think you already know my issue with gold, right? I don't have an issue with gold on an individual level. Like right. if an individual investor wants to own it, hold it, to preserve buying power, like I have absolutely no issue with that. Where I get frustrated with gold is on a sovereign level. in that you're going to have governments that, through branding and marketing, suggest that they've got a peg, when in reality, I mean, you can go back and look at it, even in this country from the 1940s until we came off the gold standard. Did we really have a peg, or did we have a peg in branding and marketing? Because we were adjusting the money multiplier. I've got charts that kind of show how we were adjusting that money multiplier based on what they had in the vaults, right? And so, although it briefed well, in practicality, like any other gold standard, it failed because they were manipulating the ledger and they were manipulating the amount of currency that was riding on top of the amount of gold that was in the vaults. So where I get a little bit frustrated with, and you would see this, I think Russia's a perfect example. They're threatening, or they're, I don't know, you call it a threat. They're saying that they're going to start backing their currency with gold, or that they're going to accept gold for their oil sales, and that it's becoming sound money. But in order to actually truly run a peg, you have to be willing to sell the gold in the vault at a certain price in order to peg the currency.
Yeah.
I think, and this is, you know, this is me, when I'm looking at the competitive landscape that we've got happening around the globe to engineer growth through debasement, you're in this ultimate rat race of like a 100-meter sprint where the only way you can possibly win is by cheating better than the person standing next to you, right? So thinking that any one of these nation states are somehow going to just, oh yeah, we are going to actually run this race by the rules, fully knowing that nobody else here running the race is going to obey the rules, I just don't see it happening. I don't see it happening based on the demand by the populace for manipulation of currency and debasement, the free college, the you name it, right? The populace wants this as of right now. That's about to change, like you've like so eloquently highlighted. Like there's going to be a call for the exact flippening of that. But I think right now, to think that anybody could go along with this for sound money policies at a time where the cheating is the only way you can possibly stay in the race, I just don't know how it's possibly going to work.
Yeah, well, I agree with you there. I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. And there's no doubt that the great flaw of the gold, you know, model and is that, you know, it's not verifiable and it's hard to move and you can cheat on it and everything else. I mean, it's failed. I mean, the gold standard has failed. At a sovereign level. Until Bitcoin was invented, it was the best, you know, the best of all alternatives. It was the least worst alternative. And now Bitcoin's a better alternative, because of the way it's structured. But yeah, I mean, it's still relevant though. And, you know, some people have asked the question of, you know, how do I see it unfolding and will gold have, you know, any monetary value in 10 years? And look, it takes time for people to change perceptions. And you got, you know, 5,000 years of Lindy effect on gold. And you got, you know, I don't know, what is it, 12, 13 years or more, you know, on Bitcoin. And so gold's not going away. You know, I'm completely where Saylor is, that Bitcoin's a superior form of gold, you know, or of sound money. But I differ with him in the sense that I don't think gold is Bitcoin's enemy. You know, I think that there's a transition period that's going to occur between the two, and they're both sound money with slightly different characteristics. And so, you know, I foresee. I mean, Bitcoin is clearly the faster horse in the race and the better of the two, and probably where we'll end up in 20 years in terms of base money, which we need. We need a neutral reserve currency. I mean, I don't think most people in the world even have a clue of what Triffin's dilemma is. But, you know, at top monetary circles, they understand what it is. And so we will go to a neutral reserve currency, I think, out of this fourth turning, because what will happen is these will be so awfully broken and people will have suffered so much that, you know, somebody smart will get in there and say, this is the solution. And I pray that solution is ultimately Bitcoin. I think it probably will be. But I also think that there's a chance that between here and there, you know, you've got three nuclear powers in the world, three big nuclear powers, get more, but, you know, Russia, China, and ourselves. And two of them are betting pretty heavily on gold. And we could leapfrog them if we bet on Bitcoin. I think we should. And hopefully that's what Jason Lowry is able to convince the Pentagon of. But, you know, it's a tricky issue. And I wrestle with it every day. I mean, you know, my personal account, my PA, you know, I'm much more heavily Bitcoin than gold. But I also manage a gold fund, a gold stock fund. And, you know, a lot of my investors are boomers that want nothing to do with Bitcoin. And, you know, I've got 20% of my fund in Bitcoin. and they've seen the performance and they like that, but they don't want to give up on the gold. And I understand why. You know, this is a new technology that they view as not being widely accepted and having risk. I think that's falling away. I've said in the past, I went to the gold show and I gave a speech on why all gold people need to own Bitcoin, and a speech is available, it's out on the web. And, you know, this was a gold show with a lot of older people who've owned gold for a long time, been very frustrated. And somebody asked the question, said, how many of you guys own Bitcoin? Half the hands went up. I thought that was impressive. Your gold holder is your best Bitcoin convert. You know, they understand the monetary issue.
Yeah.
They just need to understand what, you know, digital immutability is. But Bitcoin's not Doge, right? I mean, it's completely different. It's not XRP, it's the real deal. And so once they come to understand that, most of them eventually embrace it and start transitioning over and like me, you know, become more and more, you know, into it as time goes by. So, but how this whole thing unfolds, none of us know, right? I mean, there's a lot of politics involved. I think that what I can say with confidence, what I believe anyway, is that for individuals and families, if you want to carry your savings and wealth through for your kids, grandkids, and, you know, your family, your next generations, you know, your best places to be are, you know, in this order, you know, Bitcoin, silver, gold, or maybe gold, silver. Silver is more volatile, but, you know, and somebody asked the question on the thread, you know, if you had 100,000, how would you allocate it? You know, I'd probably put the average person, I'd probably put them a third into each of those three things. You know, I mean, I know there are people who say, well, you should go 100% Bitcoin. Well, whatever. I mean, they're all going to maintain value, you know, over time.
I think a really important thing that's missed, especially with the few characters that you have on Twitter, is age when you're doing portfolio construction. And you're also considering, well, what lifestyle is this person trying to preserve at that particular point in their life? Or if you're dealing with a young person, right, how much is this person trying to grow, and how much risk tolerance are they willing to take based on how much more time they have to catch up if they're wrong? And these are nuances that are vital to portfolio construction. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No one ever addresses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll add to that volatility, which you alluded to with the risk point of view. I mean, you know, look, people in the Bitcoin space can handle a 30% drawdown, a 50% drawdown, even an 80% drawdown, because we know what it is. We believe in the long term. We know it's going to win. They're going to be worth millions of dollars per coin, you know, full stop. So we're good. But, you know, if I take my 80-year-old mother and put her into Bitcoin and she's looking at the statements every month, right, and I put all her net worth into Bitcoin and she, you know, her net worth gets drawn down by 50%, she is going to freak out. Yeah. I mean, she is going to completely and totally freak out. And she just can't handle that. So, you know, as you point out, everybody has a different risk tolerance. There are different points in their life. And, you know, gold has never had an 80% drawdown. It just hasn't, you know. So, and yet they, you know, they all represent sound money in today's world.
Here's a question I loved. I don't think you're prepared for this one.
Okay.
When will clown world peak?
Yeah, so I love that question too. I think clown world will peak when it gets very serious and real. You know what I mean? I'm sad to have to say that, but I think, you know, let's look at a prior example. Let's say the roaring 20s, when everyone was, you know, drinking like crazy and partying and the good times were roaring and the stock market was going up. And, you know, I remember my grandfather had a business and he levered it up and he almost lost it because of that leverage. And, you know, that was kind of happy times clown world, and it's maybe similar to what we've lived through here with this bull market. Okay, and then the depression hit, and he was struggling to survive, and so was everybody else. They were just trying to feed themselves. And then, you know, I mean, there are people who in the Midwest who live by, you know, I've read stories of they literally lived by, you know, the fact that they had a gun. They were able to shoot squirrels and possums, and, you know, that's how they got their food, right? You know, and then a war broke out, and, you know, it was an existential war. It was for all the marbles. You had a bunch of evil powers that wanted to take over the world, and, you know, we had to go overseas and slay them. You know, the people who did that, you know, those were serious people. I mean, that was the greatest generation. Those were very serious people who addressed a very serious issue, and there weren't any clowns left. And after that, you know, we had a pretty stable world in the 50s and 60s. It didn't feel stable to them because they were worried about the Cold War and a lot of other things, but there's a lot of good going on. you know, before they decided to assassinate a president and start a war. But I guess my point is, I think that when times get tough, and I think they're about to get really tough, that clown world's going to go away. Mm-hmm. NFTs aren't going to have any value. You know, it's, I mean, we're going to go back to some fundamental values. You know, who do you know? Who, you know, who can you trust? What do you value? You know, family and friends, you know, what really counts? And, you know, what do you produce? Not what do you lie about or say you've got or how much paper can you shuffle, but what can you actually do? You know, are you a doctor? Can you heal people? You know, whatever it might be. You know, are you an oil field worker? Can you help, you know, get oil out of the ground? Are you a farmer? Can you produce food? I mean, you know, people who do real stuff have been terribly left behind and undercompensated in this 40-year finance bubble.
Amen to that, sir. Amen to that.
Right? I mean, it's tragic. It's just tragic. Look at the way that Midwest was hollowed out.
Yes.
You know, then you had the Sacklers come in and, you know, mess them all up with all those drugs and kill all those people. I mean,
yes.
What's happened to this country is absolutely tragic. And yet there are enough people around, there's enough of a remnant around who remembers what it used to be like, because mm-hmm. we grew up in the good times and we knew we had grandparents who fought in those wars and, you know, and uncles and aunts. And we believed, you know, in the fundamental goodness of this country. And it is a great country with great people. And even though, you know, it's gone very much astray, tough times, you know, and Marty and Jack's generation, they're going to step up.
Yeah.
They're going to step up and go, you guys F this up and we know how to fix it. And here's what we do. We go back to sound money. You know, we reward the right things. We get the money out of politics. We put in term limits. You know, we go back to what the founding principle, we investigate the CIA. Maybe we shut it down. You know, we go back to the founding the principles this country was founded on. And, you know, and therefore our, you know, our grandkids will live much better lives. And, you know, there's a lot of good out there. There's been so much in the way of technical advances that are fabulous.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there's a lot of good out there. I mean, if we can just stop from blowing ourselves up, I mean, that's my greatest fear is just that, you know, even in this little thing, I mean, this little Ukrainian thing reminds me very much of, you know, World War I and how they stumbled into that.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, you know, insulting, I mean, sitting there and having like, you know, schoolboy bully fights with each other. I mean, the way Putin talks to Biden and the way Biden talks to Putin, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, these guys have nuclear weapons, you know, in their hands. You know, who knows if somebody makes a misstep, right? I mean, it's, to me, it's a very dangerous thing that's going on. And they need to calm the war side of this down. If they want to fight it at an economic level, great. You know, let's fight it out over money and sound money and resources. Okay. You know, that's a fight. I mean, if we get back to a neutral monetary standard, Luke, I'm sure in your conversation with him pointed this out. If we get back to a neutral monetary standard, U.S. industry will grow. I mean, Intel's putting a plant into Ohio. You know, I mean, we will come back. I mean, the mistakes we've made will get solved with a sound monetary standard, but they won't get solved until we get there. And sadly, I don't think our leaders today aren't smart enough to take us there without having this blow up. And it's going to blow up. I mean, that's one thing I really strongly believe in my bones. It is going to blow up and soon. I mean, certainly within 10 years and probably within 5. So, and that's sad. I'm not happy to say that, but what I'm good at, what I've been paid to do is analyze stuff. And I've looked at historically the patterns and that strikes me that's the pattern. It's going to blow up.
Larry, the last time we had this shock to the stock market, you and I both agree. We think that this is coming pretty soon. The NASDAQ was down about 30% through that March 2020 sell-off.
Right.
That same period of time, gold was down. It wasn't down a lot. Bitcoin was down 60% through this sell-off with equities. Now, it had a substantial recovery, very quick.
Came back fast.
Quick recovery. Do we see something similar to that on this go-around?
You could with each cycle, people get smarter. So it's different every time. I mean, Bitcoin has had several 80% drawdowns. I mean, but I think there's more and more people who are realizing that it's a safe harbor. And I actually feel the same way with gold. You know, in 2008, gold sold off hard. I mean, look, in a liquidity crunch, you know, correlations go to 1 and everything goes down. Everyone's just scrambling for cash.
Yeah.
right, to stay alive. So you sell, you don't sell what you want to sell, you sell what you can sell, what you have to sell.
Yes.
Right. I mean, I actually had a bunch of silver ounces that I had put in a depository and levered them up. And I, you know, in March of 2020, I got a call that basically said, you got to come up with X thousand dollars. It was a big number. It was like, you know, almost a, well, it was a big six figure number, you know, in 3 days, or else, you know, we're going to force sell your silver at $12 an ounce. And it kind of was a lesson for me about leverage, right? And, you know, that's why I've often said on Bitcoin holders, other holders, be careful not to be leveraged.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you got to know what you own. You got to know why you own it. And you got to be prepared. You know, and it's the same with houses. I mean, people go, well, okay, I'm going to do the Stennis trade. I'm going to buy this house because they're going up and I know it's going to work and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to get a mortgage. Well, okay, you do all that. We have a depression. You lose your job. You know, your house in value is inflated. You know, you can't make the mortgage payments. You're going to lose the house.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's to answer your question, I don't think we will have that deep a drawdown in silver, gold, or Bitcoin this time around, because I think a large percentage of the people have become aware of the issue. And the issue is the monetary, you know, debasement. And these are your safe havens. In fact, I've seen more and more things where if the stock market, you know, we've seen days where the stock market will be weak, the bond market will be weak, and the gold share market will be strong, you know, which is very interesting to me. You're starting to see, you know, you're starting to see these correlations break. And I mean, year to date, you know, my fund is up. You know, year to date, the stock market's down. I mean, it's not a huge gap between the two, but that's unusual. That hasn't happened for
a while. Hey, that's worth bragging about, Larry. That's worth bragging.
Yeah, it's not bragging. It's just an observation. And I think that gap's going to get bigger.
Yeah.
I think that gap's going to be. But, I mean, certainly on a short-term basis, could any of these things get hit? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's, I mean, there's a, get on Twitter and Google Mermican. Have you ever seen the Mermican chart on the German Deutschmark in
gold terms? Yeah, the volatility, right? In it.
Look at the volatility, right? I mean,
I think that's a really important chart for what's to come here in the next 5 years for people to fully understand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and that's, to me, that's the, you know, as you're trying to guide people through this, it's extremely important that you help them understand what they own, why they own it. You know, I mean, like, look at the Bitcoiners who pumped it at 17,000 to people who didn't understand what they were buying.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went down and then they blew it out at 3,500. And guys like me bought it at 3,500.
Yeah.
And I was buying, by the way, I bought it at 17,000 too. But the point is, this is like, we're flying an airplane and conditions are getting really bad and we're maybe on the borderline of crashing. I mean, you know, the dials are going to start going nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to, I mean, when the dials are going nuts, you got to know, you got to have, you know, you got to have your hand on the stick and you got to understand exactly what you're aiming for, you know? And so you don't want to get blown out of your sound money assets. You don't want to get blown out of your house. You don't want to get blown out of your, you know, your Bitcoin. You don't want to get blown out of your silver or your gold, you know, and leverage can do that to you.
Larry, this is my last question for you. So people hearing this, this can get depressing. This can get people down, right?
Yeah.
But give people kind of a message of hope or a message of, you know, if you're on the right side of this, there's large opportunities here for folks. So
absolutely. I mean, look, I mean, you know, it's, I got smashed from 2011 to 2015. You know, I got absolutely smashed because I was long gold and gold stocks. I mean, I watched my net worth, you know, really severely decline. And that was horrible. It was one of the worst things I've ever been through. And yet it was that smash that caused me to realize I was, you know, physically out of shape and I wanted to be around to fight the battle and win at the end of the game. And so I went crazy on getting into shape. I got into CrossFit and everything else. And so the point I guess I'm trying to make is that, you know, this is going to be tough, but you can view that as bad or you can view that as an opportunity. You can view it as a chance, you know. And you know, we're all playing for posterity, right? We've only got so much time here. And, you know, some point you'll be near the end game and the kids will be saying, man, grandpa did it right. Do you know what I mean? I mean, he, you know, things really sucked. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't fun being 18 years old in 1939, you know, in the United States. And, you know, the Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, or, you know, 41, 42, the Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor. And, you know, the Nazis are rolling through Germany and, you know, you're fighting age and you realize this is going to suck. But the flip of that is, you know, you got a chance to, you know, to prove yourself in a very tough environment. And if you come out the other side, you're going to be the greatest generation. I mean, and I do think, I mean, there really is brightness on the other side of this. I mean, when we fix this, you know, it's going to be a much better world. It really is. I mean, it's not a bad world. I mean, what we've got is we've got bad leaders and a broken system. And so every generation has the challenge that they've got to endure. And, you know, this group of us living today, you know, and the boomers, you know, look, the boomers are going to suffer later in their life. That's because we've had a pretty cushy life, you know, for the last 30 or 40 years, right? And now we're about to get tested. And it's going to really suck for some boomers if they're not on the right side of this. For young people, arguably, it's an enormous opportunity.
Enormous.
I mean, you know, they get on the right side of this and, you know, I mean, I don't think this is going to last 30 or 40 years. I mean, this is going to get taken. This is going to be over. I mean, if you look at fourth turnings, they're typically 20 to 30 years long. And I think this one started in 08.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you there. Right?
So, you know, okay, worst case, it's 20, 30, you know, 8-ish. So, you know, young people will have a lot of good life post this issue. And I don't think it's going to go that long. I think it's probably going to be over by 2030. That's my opinion. So I have been wrong on timing, though. Things sometimes do take longer than I think. So perhaps it's a bit longer. But, you know, it's an opportunity if you view it as an opportunity. And irrespective of how you view it, you know, we don't get to choose the conditions we live in. All we get to choose is how we respond to them. And so, you know, I've always been very much of the Stoic philosophy that, you know, I mean, whatever the times throw at us, let them throw them at us. You know, what matters isn't, you know, I mean, what matters is, are we doing it right? Are, you know, are we doing what's honorable? Are we doing what's correct? Are we doing what's ethical? You know, are we working hard? Are we being the best version of ourselves? I don't know. I don't know. Personally, I don't want a cushy life. Do you know what I mean? I really don't.
I don't want to push.
I mean, you know, I'm into CrossFit. It's like, you know, you just push yourself as hard as you possibly can. You know, I want to be the best version of me I can be. Yeah. I don't want a cushy life. I want to be challenged. I think Bitcoiners feel that way too. They want to change the world.
I totally, you know, agree with that.
fix the money, fix the world. And if anyone's listening to this or looking at this, I mean, the people who are inclined to listen to this, you have a set of knowledge that most people don't have. And so imagine, you know, fully understanding what's going on and being in a position to help yourself, help other people, help your friends, educate people, change the world for the better. So, in my view, even though there could be some very rough stuff that happens, and there'll always be rough stuff happening in the world, you know, there's a way for all of us to feel good about it and to, you know, to make progress with it. So, and let me just say this, you know, I go to gold shows and the people are depressed because they've been fighting this battle for so long and they're so depressed. I go to Bitcoin things, everyone's fired up. That's what I love about Bitcoin. I mean, it's such a sharp spear.
Yeah.
It is definitely, I mean, the other side, they're totally screwed.
Yeah.
They are totally, I mean, we're going to win. I mean, we're going to win big time. And that's going to be fun too. But along the way, is it going to be rough? Yeah, it's going to be rough. There's no doubt.
I love that.
No doubt.
Harness your environment. Don't be a victim of it. I love the message. Larry, thank you so much for making time. We have to do this more often. I need to bring you onto the show more often here because
Just a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah,
I enjoy talking to you. It's really a lot of fun. It's off the cuff. I know.
we got to get a high five in next week down in Miami.
Yeah, I'll see you in Miami. It's only a week away, so I'll see you next week.
Awesome. Okay, thank you so much for your time, Larry.
Thank you.
If you guys enjoyed this conversation, be sure to follow the show on whatever podcast application you use. Just search for We Study Billionaires. The Bitcoin-specific shows come out every Wednesday, and I'd love to have you as a regular listener. If you enjoyed the show or you learned something new or you found it valuable, if you can leave a review, we would really appreciate that. And it's something that helps others find the interview in the search algorithm. So anything you can do to help out with a review, we would just greatly appreciate. And with that, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. To access our show notes, courses, or forums, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.